This podcast includes graphic depictions of true crime cases and may contain explicit language. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, this is Robin.
This is Jackie.
And this is Amanda.
And you are listening to We Saw the Devil, a podcast dedicated to horror, true crime, and all things macabre. If you want to follow us between shows, don't forget to check us out online. You can go to our website at www.wesawthedevil.com. You can follow us on Instagram at We Saw the Devil Podcast or on Twitter at We Saw the Devil. And if you want to follow specific co-hosts' social media, you can find the links to those on our website as well. Hello, everyone, and welcome to part two of our May 3rd Mega Lori Vallow update. We posted part one on May 4th and following up by part two because there's just so much information to cover.
Yeah, it would have been a very, very long episode.
So we decided to do you guys a favor by cutting it in half. But let's talk about two things. So corrections. So I said that Melanie's mom, Stacy, passed away in 1988. I must be getting old. My eyes must be failing me. I don't know why, but in my notes, I did actually have 1998. So there was a lapse between my eye and mouth coordination. So again, Melanie's mother, Stacy, died in 1998. Now, also, I also misspoke by saying that most Mormons believe in multiple probations. Again, another lapse here, as traditional Mormon theology does not accept multiple mortal probations, but a lot of the fringe groups do. So mm-hmm. I would like to specify and clarify that statement that a lot of the fringe groups do and the traditional Mormon church does not, because they see it almost as a form of reincarnation. That is not a widely accepted traditional LDS element.
And we are trying our best to learn, you know, LDS doctrine and understand it. It's a lot of information, so forgive us. We are trying our best to learn it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And as I stated, I've already put the correction on our YouTube video. You know, we pride ourselves in trying to present accurate and correct information, especially when it comes to the religious elements of this case, because there are so many. That's also why we brought Ian onto the show, who assisted us in a series of dissecting kind of Mormonism in this case, because he helped us define and dissect different elements and how it is accepted as LDS or not, or if it's more fringe. So we do plan on bringing Ian on more in the future to assist us with this. But I did want to clarify that multiple mortal probations is not an accepted Mormon theology. And it is more aligned with fringe groups. And that is a big thing in the case, is that Chad takes Mormon elements, like actual traditional Mormonism, perverts it for his own, you know, purposes.
Right. He twists it and adds a lot to it.
So we are going to go ahead and air part two of the episode. Again, you can find us at www.wesawthedevil.com. And if you have any questions, corrections, comments, concern, don't forget, you can email us at wesawthedevil@gmail.com. So what's next?
Oh, gosh. So, you know, my favorite thing, court documents. there was another request for discovery. Means is requesting a ton of records again. So it was signed on April 28th. And it's a pretty lengthy one, you know, discovery request. It is, hold on, I have it in front of me. It's 6 pages long of information. So I'm just going to, you know, brief overview because it's fairly detailed, but he's pretty much requesting all records related to the confiscated electronic devices of Melanie, Ian, and Brandon, all recording statements, communications, etc., regarding all interactions between, you know, Melanie, Ian, and Brandon again. He's also requesting all records regarding the communication procedures, and he wants them before the pandemic, so the COVID pandemic, and then during. So he wants to see, you know, I guess, the changes in it. But pretty much anything regarding Lori in any way, shape, or form with the jail, he wants. But it's very long. If you want all of the details, Justin Lum did post it. But yeah, it was signed on the 28th of April by Means. And yeah, he wants everything.
And this is very normal. I mean, just to put it out there, it's very normal for defense attorneys to request everything, anything, grasp at straws, even if it seems irrelevant. But so this is very normal. It's not abnormal, but it's just he has no leg to stand on.
Yeah, I mean, I understand a lot of this could potentially help his case in certain fashions, but I think, yeah, he's just trying to waste some time in a sense, too. Yeah. In certain parts. Like, I see, obviously, he wants the record or the information about Melanie and Brandon and Ian and all of that nonsense, but I don't know. It's just a lot. Mm-hmm. And these court documents are lengthy now.
Mm-hmm. And we go through all of them, top to bottom, just for you. Amanda is now an Esquire.
Oh my gosh. If you could see the pile of court documents to my right now, it's pretty big. My poor printer. All right. So, what everyone's talking about. You ready for this?
Dateline
episode.
All right. So, I'm going to go ahead and... So just one piece that I found tremendously interesting, and, you know, honestly, it's not even that relevant to, like, it is, but it isn't to Lori Vallow, you know, the case as a whole, is Colby actually came out and publicly said that he was sexually abused by mm-hmm. Joseph Ryan. If any of you, and I know Annie Cushing was Joseph Ryan's sister, and she's in the Christmas Misery group. She's in where Tylee Ryan and Joshua Vallow. Every time she speaks, it's posted on Reddit. And so she made a very lengthy post with her personal experiences on Colby's claims of child abuse.
It was sad.
It was so sad. And people are speculating, oh, he's lying, or Lori made him, you know, manipulated him. Obviously, none of us know. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I have to say, and I've read this countless times, that it's not typical for men to become public about their own sexual abuse, especially as a child, unless it did actually happen. Men, in particular, don't like that coming to light. They don't, especially on a public stage, and especially one this large. Time and time again, psychiatrists and whatnot have pretty much doubled down on if men come forward because of the way that society treats them with sex abuse and whatnot, it's more than likely true. And I do believe that it is more than likely true, personally. So seeing Annie Cushing come out and write a very lengthy post detailing her experiences of physical abuse that she witnessed. Mm-hmm. And I mean, kudos to Annie Cushing, too, for saying, yes, I saw my brother physically abuse Colby. And she even testified against her own brother in court.
Well, just the things that she had seen, I guess they were trying to get more out of her, but she was very fact driven. And just, she kind of details the experience and what she had seen as far as the abuse towards Colby. And it is really sad. And I mean, for her stepping up and going like, I don't want any part in this. It's sad. And it is commendable that she's just like, I'm not talking to you anymore.
No, she really did. And just to kind of go over her post really briefly, she pretty much states, I've covered this in multiple interviews. She was on Nancy Grace. Remember, she was on Dr. Phil like over a month ago, 2020. She and her brother were both victims of childhood sexual abuse. They were actually put into the foster care system as well. I'm unsure. Annie hasn't spoken to it, and I'm not going to speak for her, obviously, of where her abuse took place, but they both were victims of childhood sexual abuse. She says, quote, I witnessed my brother physically abuse Colby. He had his wrist bent back as he dragged him up the stairs. It was unnecessary force. And then I heard the belt. And so apparently Annie Cushing and her daughter went to go visit Joseph, witnessed him abuse Colby, just witnessed him flat out abuse Colby. And she talks about how this incident was the quote, proverbial last straw in Joe's and my relationship. The kids were scared after his rages, and Annie had to promise them that they would never see him again. And Annie says that she told Lori that she worried about the safety of the children and appealed to her not to let him handle discipline. And she described her brother as a bachelor till the rapture kind of dude. He was brand new to parenting and was completely out of his depth. So she was completely disgusted and appalled and let the physical abuse of Colby end her relationship with him.
Yeah, and to protect her kids too. Yeah,
makes sense. I mean, good for you, Annie Cushing. Annie claims that Lori told her that Joseph was both sexually and physically abusing Colby and Tylee. And Annie states what Amanda's kind of already alluded to is that the attorneys and Lori kind of tried to get her to say things like speak to things that she didn't witness and were kind of upset with her, but she was like, no, I'm only going to speak to what I witnessed. So, and then she kind of talks about Joseph Ryan, how she believes that he got a lot of his anger and resentment and trauma from the foster care system. And then she actually posted some documents, which is really, really, really interesting. And she highlighted some pieces. The key part to all of this, I'm not going to go through it. You can read it. It's in every single Lori Vallow group, pretty much known to man. But there were multiple attempts to say that Joseph, Lori made it very public. She told the police, therapists were told, CPS was called into all of this, and to say that Joseph Ryan had sexually abused Colby. And mm-hmm. it never stuck. He was never charged right. for it. Actually, every single time the reports come out and say that there are inconsistencies, a detective said there are big issues in this case because of the number of inconsistencies. So nothing actually came out of this. And right. she actually stated that she is concerned that Tylee is being pushed by her mother to make an outcry.
Mm-hmm. And does this sound familiar? Mm-hmm. I feel like she's been coached a lot by Lori.
Yeah. She says, she stated that she, now this is from the therapist, right? And this documentation was put into a court document. The therapist stated that she had been seeing Tylee since she was 3. She stated that she had told Mrs. Vallow to not push Tylee into saying anything, but that Mrs. Vallow had just refused to take this advice. She stated that her counseling with Tylee has almost become counterproductive and could be a result of Lori pushing her. She stated that Tylee has now almost bottled up due to being pushed so much. She stated that Tylee almost, quote, spilled the beans, end quote, during one session, but then closed up. She stated that Mrs. Vallow is very anxious and is tied up in multiple legal situations and that that was affecting Tylee.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last quote that I think is relevant is, as well, Mrs. Vallow is a devout Mormon who has mentioned to me that death would be an option before giving Tylee to her father, Mr. Joseph Ryan, even for a visit. These are real and serious concerns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, if she's willing to choose death over a visitation, what else would she choose death over? You know, like end of the world?
Yeah. And back, and this happened, transpired around like 2006, beginning of, in middle of 2007. So in 2007, they claimed that Joseph sexually abused Colby, and Colby gave his story. Uh-huh. The district attorney's case rejected and said they wouldn't take it because they were trying to gather as much as information as possible. So they basically said, no, do some more investigation, like on this, like, you know, counselors, interviews with police, so on and so forth. Colby was re-interviewed for the case and added a lot more information to his original complaint, like his outcry, right? The interviewer said that Colby's account was suspect because he didn't mention all of the details initially and said, oh, and when she asked him about this, he said, oh, well, I had a head injury. And then the court, like the people asked Lori for Colby's mattress because Lori said that Joseph used to go into Colby's room to sexually abuse him. And they asked them for Colby's mattress so that it can be sent off for forensic testing. And yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, so apparently Joseph was really like upset about receiving the request for the mattress, and some things were followed through with, some things weren't. So was Lori, I don't know. It's just, it was crazy. And this is all posted by Annie Cushing.
Right. Yeah. And if you want to see it, the Christmas Misery Group is where I first saw it.
So, and here we have an actual counselor who had seen Tylee since she was 3 years old state that Lori is manipulating her. So that's pretty intense.
Yeah, and I really do think that that relationship carried on that in that same fashion.
So that was my, like, from the Dateline, after Colby made his claims of sexual abuse, I went down the rabbit hole on that, and that's why I found it relevant, is it kind of led to, well, here's the family history, going back to Joseph Ryan, and then, oh my God, you know, this is how Tylee, from basically birth, has had a terrible relationship, a terrible life, really, in a lot of aspects,
right.
and how it translated to now here where we are in this case. So I found that to be incredibly relevant and powerful, personally.
Yeah, for sure. No, I read that twice, I mean, it's mm-hmm. a fairly long post, but just it made me so sad knowing what, you know, she witnessed. And that's with, you know, that's mm-hmm. with company over. So think about that, too.
So what did you think of the woman of the hour, the woman of the day? What did you think of Melanie showing on this?
Oh, my gosh. So I just wanted to almost talk about body language as a whole, because there are several times. Well, first off, Melanie is in her own world, right? And she just looks like, I don't know, dazed, right?
She's acting like she's either on a benzo, Xanax, something. She did not act normal.
No. Yeah, she seemed like she was in her own world and just kind of like looking through someone is kind of the look that, I don't know, I came up with. I don't know.
Acting like a Stepford wife.
Yeah, that's a good, relation there. I just noticed too, just like her body language from when she was talking about her stuff. And then when it was Ian's turn to talk too, how it shifted, like abruptly it shifted. Real quick off of Melanie, but when they first opened and Colby was on and he was saying something about like, mom loves us, Keith Morrison's face change. I was like, oh man, there's a lot. And just as far as, I won't say that a ton of new big information came of it. There were a few details that I was like, oh, you know, I didn't know that before. But nothing huge, in my opinion. What do you think?
If you're like us, there was like very little actually new in this series.
Yeah. I mean, it was good, though, to see them, like to see Melanie and just you could tell Keith Morrison was like, mm-hmm. And a couple times, like his transitions made me laugh because he was just like, yeah, and this, like, just the way that he transitioned to the next either interviewee or whatever he was doing, he was saying, yeah, that's bullshit.
Yeah. So what I took away from Melanie is, like you said, she was just in La La Land. It was ridiculous. So Melanie said that she was not close to Tylee at all, and which I find really interesting considering she and Lori were so tight at the hip. They both got into the Chad, right? The podcasting, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And then together. Lori moved to Rexburg, and then Melanie followed. So she also spoke about Tylee in the past tense. And actually, in Rexburg, Melanie was Tylee's, quote, nanny for a while.
So, yeah, that was one of the big things that I found out is that, yeah, Melanie nannied for Tylee when she was little and Colby when he was younger. So I feel like if you nanny for any kid, you're going to have a little bit of a relationship. Not that you love every kid you nanny for or babysit or whatever, but I mean, they're related. And I mean, she's not, you know, terribly older than Tylee,
Lori,
right?
Lori was like her mother. Lori was like Melanie's mother. So like by default, wouldn't she have some sort of bond with Tylee?
Well, that's what I'm saying. But also just as far as like, you're always closer with like the younger, older relative, right, if that makes sense. And so Melanie would have been that younger, older relative that she probably mm-hmm. would have bonded with. So it's just, yeah, it was very strange to me when she was like, we weren't close. I'm like, okay, that's really weird. How are you not close? Not saying they have to have like a ton of similarities by all means, but I mean, you lived close to each other. I'm sure they saw each other a lot when they were in Arizona. And then she claims that she didn't see the kids when she got to Rexburg. And then just the fact that she said, I guess she talked about how she asked Lori where they were. And Lori just made up this thing about Tylee being with friends
and
or
Melanie
something.
And Melanie was like, I just took it, you know, at face value. I just believed it. And Melanie's...
Yeah, but where was JJ?
JJ's never mentioned. And I wish that Keith Morrison had followed up and probed more on that.
We don't know that he didn't.
That's true, because we are only seeing, like, what, 30 mm-hmm. minutes of a total interview when they were probably interviewed for hours?
Exactly. And then the fact that even, like, Annie said, I've already mentioned this several times, but everyone's cut it. Like, mm-hmm. who knows what else he tried to get out of them?
That's true. That's true.
Because
as well.
He totally called their bullshit.
He did. And Melanie backpedaled on a lot of her involvement with the group itself. And, you know, especially with Tylee, she almost pulled, like, a Mariah Carey, like, I don't know her. You know, like, really?
Kind of,
like,
yeah.
You've spent, like, pretty much, like, your entire adult life, like, with Lori and Tylee, you know, with that family. So, okay, cool. And then she said that what also struck me as very interesting is that she said that Alex told her himself that he did not take the shot at Brandon. And did you see her body language when they were discussing that?
Well, he had to ask her twice, but did he ever deny it?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, well, you know, she spoke around it, mm-hmm. and that's why he 100% was like, but did he deny it? And you see her like, oh, yeah, he denied it.
Yeah, it was one of the most uncomfortable moments I've ever seen in an interview.
Right?
She is a very, well, very bad liar.
She is. She just talks around the question in hopes that they go away.
And she's one of those people who can't contain her facial expressions and how it relates to how she's feeling in that moment.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, she did that a couple times, or just the way that she changes when Ian talks is night and day. They also talked, you know, Charles Vallow, they talked about him quite a bit, talked about when they adopted JJ and how Colby and Tylee actually bonded with him pretty quick, that he was a pretty good guy. Mm-hmm. They talk about their moves to Kauai. And then that's where they met April. So I guess Lori's friend. I never knew, you know, her name. I know that she had a friend out there, but that's all I knew. So April's information, I think, was pretty new as well. Dateline also mentioned that Charles converted to Mormonism. And this is where it was a little weird. When they were, I want to say they were talking to April, they said Lori started saying she was growing spiritually. And Charles wasn't on the same level, essentially. And I was like, oh, that's weird. Also, April mentioned when Lori came back. So this is after they moved to back to Arizona. And then she came back to Kauai. Mm-hmm. She said Lori was manic and changed. Mm-hmm. And she started talking about, like, Charles being the bad guy, like being out to be the bad guy all the time. And she felt that Lori had changed considerably after connecting with Chad. Mm-hmm. She told her about, you know, the beliefs and their doctrine. And she was just like, oh, okay. Yeah, they went to church together before. So they were, you know, on the same level for a lot of it. And then after she met Chad, she's like, wait, what happened to you? What are you now? Then they talked about, too, at one point, Chad getting hit by the wave and having an experience where he entered the spirit world, in a sense. And they're the ones that told him that he should move to Rexburg to write out the end times. And don't you wish that you could hear Tammy's side of this? Like, oh, we're moving to Rexburg. Why are we moving to Rexburg? Oh, the end times. Okay. And then one question I had too. So remember a while ago when Nate on East Idaho News had done that interview with the woman where you can't see her face, and she was part of, you know, the prepping stuff, but then got out of it. Mm-hmm. Is this the same interview from Dateline? I mean, not the same interview, but the same woman.
I don't know.
So they interview Angela Stone, and her story that she talks about is very similar to the woman that talked to Nate a couple months ago.
I've seen it speculated that it is Angela. People okay. have done some kind of digging on that, and it's just people aren't able to confirm it.
Okay. I mean, yeah, they called her Jessica, I want to say, in mm-hmm. the interview with Nate a while back.
Yeah.
But her story is very similar. So mm-hmm. if it is the same person, okay, I understand the full story now because she went over more. But if it's a different person, then how many, you know, people did they get and how many people were able to leave successfully, you know? Yeah. But yeah, she talked about kind of her getting accidentally involved with this cult and then a friend kind of bringing it to her attention. Hey, you're in a cult. Yeah. And then her being able to leave. But she did mention, too, that Chad believed Tammy should have died in that car accident or in a car accident. And now she was inhabited by an evil spirit.
Yeah.
So that's terrifying.
No, it's absolutely horrifying. A couple other random key pieces of takeaways that I had from Dateline. That Chad believed that Tammy was a zombie and, quote, didn't have control of herself anymore. That's mm-hmm. pretty damning. And then we go back to, Amanda's already mentioned April and Kauai.
Right.
Where Lori told her that she was one of the 144,000 and had come with her to be saved.
Yeah.
Lori's like, you have to come with me to be saved. And April's, nah, I think I'm good.
I love April. Yeah. So in February of 2019, mm-hmm. again, that's when Lori had returned, or I guess went out there. And it sounded like no one knew where she was.
Yeah, she's disappeared.
But yeah, she went to April's house and was like, hey, you're part of this now. And April's like, yeah, no.
I'm good. Thanks, though. Lori also told Colby that Charles had a heart attack when he was shot by Alex, which is like, what?
Yeah.
Lori also told Charles that his soul and body had been taken by a man named Nick Schneider, who is an evil being.
Of course.
Like, who the fuck is Nick Schneider?
Right. And I did appreciate, too, just speaking of the shooting, that they did have the detectives. So two of the detectives that day, Nathan and Cassandra, I want to say their names were. And they mentioned how Lori was aware of the situation when she had arrived and that the stories between Lori and Alex really didn't match, which yep. we all called out when we were listening or, you know, watching the body cams.
Mm-hmm. You can see it plain as day. That's why, like, if anything about this entire case, yes, my you know, obvious focus is the missing children, right? But if anything in this case has me in a tailspin, it is the absolute negligence of Charles's death that day by the police mm-hmm. officers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of it from both sides. Like, really, what they could have done different is maybe taken Alex in immediately. And then also when the wife is laughing and joking around and already knew what had happened, go, we're going to take you down too because something's off. I don't know the legality or, like, what they could have stood on.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the fact that they're on Dateline saying, yeah, it was a fishy situation, like, I don't know. There should have just been more sense of urgency.
Yeah.
I don't even know what I want, but it was negligent,
regardless. Yeah. And, you know, no one, we've already covered this in almost every episode. It gets me so hot and bothered. I'm like, why didn't you investigate this?
I mean, they are in the background. They are. We've seen a couple little tidbits about the investigation.
But yeah. Now they should have done it that same, you know, freaking.
Of course. Yeah. I don't know if there was like a reason, like maybe they were trying to get her for more things and they didn't want her to disappear for good. I don't know. But they did mention, too, that Tylee seemed, like, kind of calm and had, like, a story.
Mm-hmm.
And, no, Lori freaking trained her like she did on all other accounts mm-hmm. to probably say what she said and her reaction. If you notice, I want to say her arms were crossed, if I remember right, too. Mm-hmm. And that's a defensive mechanism, right? Like, that's I'm not enjoying this conversation. And
it's closed body language.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. But yeah, the heart, and then her lying to Colby, like you said, about the heart attack, and him, he says that he went over there and Tylee was crying, and then Lori told him about a fist fight, and then he had gotten shot. When did this fist fight occur? Because it was a bat 20 minutes ago, you know? So weird. Even Colby's like, I needed to get out of that situation.
And people are wondering how Melanie and Ian met, right? They apparently, Melanie claims that she met Ian on an LDS dating app.
Mm-hmm. And 2 weeks later got married.
Yeah. I'm sure he is like, what? No.
Oh, man. You made some bad choices, buddy.
And then we go back to something that we've already discussed on previous episodes. Ian wore a wire for the FBI to try to get Melanie to discuss the children.
Yeah, and that's where her body language changed. But I think he was trying to record Lori and Chad talking about the children.
And this is 90% of the speculation on social media groups, on Reddit, on forums, is what is Ian's ultimate goal here? Are he and Melanie in this together? Like, is he just trying to absolve Melanie and, you know, and basically shield her? Are they in it together? Did Ian legitimately try to assist the FBI in taking care of this shit and then, you know, realize, oh, wow, I'm in way over my head? I mean, there's so much speculation on that. And Melanie did not help her case with her body language when this was discussed.
No. And I really think that at the beginning, he was like, this is weird. And he wanted to get it all out there because he thought it was weird. Then he's like, oh, man, like, yeah, missing kids. Of course, he has kids. He's a father. He's like, we need to find these kids. And then what I think happened is he got found out, and they say in the Dateline episode that he came to Melanie about it and, you know, shared it. I don't think that's the case. I think somehow she figured it out. And then it was like, no, like, we're in this together.
Yeah.
Or else, you know, I don't, that's my speculation, obviously. But I feel like he was legit at first, and then slowly either, I don't know, they could have threatened his life. They could have threatened his kids. You know, you'll do anything to protect your kid.
Anything could happen.
One thing, I don't know if you've heard it, but this was kind of new to me. Charles texted one of his friends, right? And that's when he was talking about how Lori is part of a group called Woke and Preparing a People. What's Woke?
I'm not sure.
So that's a new one that we're going to need to look into. And then Mary, Alex's friend, was on here again, too. I know she's spoken out before, but I thought something that was significant is she talked about, you know, how close they were. And then she says that 911 call was not like Alex. It sounded scripted and it sounded planned, in my opinion. And, you know, your good friends are going to know how you sound normally versus, you know, even at work or, you know, in different situations, they know how you sound. And when she says that doesn't sound right at all, I mean, your friend's going to know.
Yeah, no, it's true. And speaking of Alex, Melanie said that Alex so in the Dateline interview, Melanie said that Alex told her that he was experiencing breathing trouble. She doesn't say that she talked to Lori. She doesn't make the statement that she called Lori.
No.
But she does state that Lori apparently later called Zulima with a, quote, feeling that something was wrong. Which I found that to be very odd. So Melanie doesn't admit to calling or telling Lori about it, but then makes a segue into, well, Lori ended up calling Zulima with a feeling that something was wrong, and then that's when Zulima discovered the Alex shit going on.
Yeah, and
it makes no sense to me.
No. And just the fact that Melanie said, she's like, I spoke with Alex every other day, and the trouble breathing. And then she also mentioned he's a super healthy guy. And then I thought it was interesting, too, that Zulima's attorneys spoke instead of her. Like, why couldn't she come on this?
Right.
What is she doing right now?
Cuddling, Amanda. She's cuddling. Okay.
Oh, my gosh. You're right. You're right. Forgive me. Well, meanwhile, while she was cuddling, I guess, she got a call from Lori to check on Alex. And then Zulima called Alex and he wasn't doing well. So then she told her son to call 911. That son that had no damn idea what the hell to do. Or didn't even know who this guy was, really.
Yeah, I just found him laying in a pile of his own feces. And was like, well, nope, not touching that. What I find really interesting is that Melanie said that she spoke with Alex, like you said, every other day.
Right.
Can we remember for a moment that, I mean, we've already kind of touched on it tonight, that Melanie was already confronted about whether Alex made the attempt on Brandon Boudreaux's life. And she was really uncomfortable. It is pretty much commonly accepted at this point. You know, Brandon hired the private investigator. It was, in fact, Alex. And then you have the storage facility video where people now it's commonly accepted that you see them moving a backseat to a Jeep, you know, right, in and out of the center, which is what Alex was driving, or, you know, the vehicle that Alex was in, at least the day that Brandon Boudreaux, you know, someone shot at him. So the fact that Melanie's like, yeah, I talked to Alex every other day. We were so close. Like, he tried to kill your ex-husband.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't think that that was the case. I think that she is speaking for what Lori might have done.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's also go back to something. He died, what, 13 days after his wedding?
Yeah.
And still, I checked again. It is not up.
It's just everything about Melanie. Melanie, to me, was a standout of seeing her, the way that she reacts, what she said. A lot of her statements are not in line with what we all know. And right, that's what's commonly accepted. But yeah, it's, and this is also not the first time, going back to Alex's death and whatnot. This is not the first time that Lori has said she's had, quote, feelings about people.
Well, yeah, she probably knows.
So Chad and Lori are currently being investigated for conspiracy, attempted murder, and murder over Tammy Daybell. That was kind of like officially put on, you know, display, which we already knew, but it was officially stated.
Yeah.
And something that was so heartbreaking to me is when it showed the sheer number of times the Woodcocks tried to contact everyone in the world about the children.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was devastated. Like, I am a hardened person. You know, nothing really makes me upset. And just seeing how desperate they were to get in touch with these children was, texts, emails, phone calls, going through trees. It was so sad.
It was. They truly, truly care about him. And it's horrible. There was an interview, published on the 1st, about them. And they're talking about how his birthday's coming up, and it's so sad. It's awful.
It is. Beyond this, I just personally have some random news items. Did you have more stuff on Dateline, like takeaways?
Just the end of it, how Melanie just kind of went off. Like, I feel like she gave the impression of she has no, and it's a lie, obviously, but she has no idea that anything's happening and anything's really wrong. And she's just like, her perception was terrible at the end.
I'm not aware of a crime having been committed. I'm like, what?
Where the hell are these children that you nannied? I mean, wouldn't you? She just expressed no emotion. And I just wanted to backhand her. Like, there are children, woman. You know, like, what are you doing? You have children. And your stupid Facebook post about your birthday, how much you care about them. Why don't you care about these ones, too? They're your family.
And I have to say that Ian didn't come off as a shining knight, you know, either. Like, he came off like he did not give a shit.
I don't think he was allowed to speak. Could you know, be. Like, I think he, yeah.
He's been neutered.
Exactly. Yeah, I feel like he wasn't allowed to. And just her body language when he did speak was like, make it quick.
Like that Judge Judy gif where she's like tapping the bench.
Yeah, that's how I perceived it. But yeah, if you want to watch the Dateline episode, I know a few people have been posting links to it online too. Yeah, so
it's everywhere. Like, people have made this readily available for your viewing pleasure. So just a couple additional just random pieces this week that have events that have transpired. Preparing a People's website has been taken down, guys. As a whole, it has been removed from the interwebs.
Now, if we could just get a vowel on that same page, we'd all be good.
Also, if you really want a pick-me-up, if COVID-19 is getting you down, head on over to Amazon Books and look at Chad Daybell's author page. Because it is just like an onslaught of one-star reviews.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's due to those those groups, which, yes, take him down.
And I would like to say that every single episode, I would like to officially instate a We Saw the Devil countdown. So again, I believe at the end of every single episode, we're going to have a countdown to the end of the world, guys. So again, if you missed it earlier, we have 80 days to go until July 22nd and the world's ending.
Oh, man. Anyone know how to make like a countdown clock?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, I have so much to accomplish in the next 80 days.
I know. You got to live your full life.
Now, and this is, I felt this morning, now, okay, so I stayed up all night, guys, like, reading on this and going down rabbit holes, and Amanda and I, if you've listened to, you know, other episodes, we, like, will go down the rabbit hole, right, on people's, like, Facebooks and this, that, and the other, and I went down a Melanie Gibb rabbit hole overnight, and Melanie Gibb, if you guys recall, is the woman in Arizona that Lori initially stated when she was in Rexburg and the police were like, hey, yo, where are the children? She's like, oh, well, they're with my friend Melanie in Arizona.
Yeah.
And they called Melanie. And Melanie later went, you know, Melanie didn't have them. And then she later went and 10 days later, I believe, and admitted that she lied to police. Melanie, for some reason, guys, I don't know how I missed it. I thought that Melanie was just a friend of Lori's. I knew that she was kind of involved in it, but I didn't realize that she was like involved in it.
Yeah.
She has her own podcast, actually. She has her own podcast. She podcasted quite a bit with Lori and Chad. Like, yes. She's big time into this. And she actually, I found a flyer, a Preparing a People flyer for July of 2019, an event in Boise, Idaho. It was a public event hosted by Chad Daybell, but it had a bunch of different authors and a bunch of different people there. Melanie Gibb is one of them, the Warrior Up podcast, which, guess what, also had Jason Mau in it frequently. Yep,
I listened to one of those, and it was a hard listen.
Yeah, it was real rough listen. But this particular event had Melanie Gibb and Hector Sosa Jr. I just found it really interesting that these people are also, they're all connected. All of them are fucking connected. In one way or another, whether it's just at an avow event or preparing a people, you know, like, they're all connected. And it's just so crazy to me. But when I saw Melanie Gibb and how she has a, you know, more of a name than I previously thought, I was shocked. And then she's friends with all these people who are obsessed with people dying in hot springs. I'm like, well.
That's horrible. I mean, a lot of people said that that's pretty easily disproven. Hopefully, luckily.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully so. It is now May 3rd, and I'm not sure what Yellowstone... What is Yellowstone looking like these days? Has the snow melted? Anybody know?
I don't know. Not yet. I know that they were trying to open it soon.
So hopefully... I know that the FBI has pretty much been waiting to be able to go in and do some surveying. But that's all I had. Did you have any additional thoughts and pieces?
No, I think just after all of the new information and those emails, it just unfortunately makes it sound less and less likely that they're alive somewhere.
Mm-hmm. It's sad. It's sad but true, but I concur. So that wraps up our update for the week of the Lori Ballard case. And as always, we will keep you updated. Every time something new happens, we will make sure that you are informed as quickly as possible. If you haven't listened, we are also now 2 episodes into our East Area Rapist / Golden State Killer overview that we're doing concurrently with the Lori Vallow stuff. So if you are interested in one of the worst criminal sprees of a human being in American history, please check that out.
Yeah, it's pretty dark. And just a special thank you to all our patrons, all the people that watch on YouTube and comment and share your thoughts, people that email us, comment on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We love you guys. Thank you for participating in the conversations. And then, and special thank you too, to our Patreon only Facebook group. I love watching your guys' discussions.
Yes. But that wraps it up for this week, guys. Again, you can find us at wesawthedevil.com. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/wesawthedevil. And don't forget, the most important thing to be a supporter of the show, if you could just take 30 seconds of your time and leave a review on iTunes, that would be more greatly appreciated than you can possibly know.
Right. It helps us out quite a bit.
It does indeed. So, wraps it up. Wash your hands. Regardless of what your state is saying, stay at home. Social distance if you can. Until next crime.